Tower, WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything that's in the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this edition of the Sunday Spin for May the 27th, 2018, the last Sunday of May and the final scheduled month of the Illinois legislature. More about that later, but hope you're all having a good Memorial Day holiday weekend. As always, welcome to our weekly look at the world of politics and policy as we go from City Hall to Springfield and all the way out to Washington, D.C. So time to grab that Sunday paper, get that hot cup of coffee, or do our best to get your week off to a good start. Well, the somebody flipped the switch on the weather, Dave. It was a little
You're
warm.
You're telling me?
Yeah. Maybe it's grab that cold cup of coffee this morning.
I'm not much of a fan of cold coffee.
I'm not either.
You know, I drink coffee, but
yes.
Cold? No, no. But you know what? You have a point here. And the thing, really, not only the heat and relatively high humidity is something to pay attention to, Rick, but also bears repeating the air quality
yes.
alert in effect now until tomorrow night. And they're talking about some very high levels of ozone and particulates in the air. So folks with breathing problems, maybe even not a breathing problem, this could affect you.
Yes,
so
yes, indeed.
You be careful out there.
And but I will. There was a point last night where it was just about as pitch perfect as weather could be.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Just out on the patio and just... it almost would have been nice to... I could have fallen asleep out there, you know?
Friday evening was pretty much the same.
Yeah.
I took a nice walk around the neighborhood on Friday evening, and it was very pleasant.
Yeah, it's strolling weather, you know?
It is strolling weather.
It really is.
It is strolling.
And
even if you don't have a stroller, you can still
there you
stroll.
Go. Exactly, exactly. Well, so what are you cooking out for Memorial Day?
Fish. With
yes.
roasted vegetables, and that's what I'm doing.
Are you planking the fish?
Yes, I am planking the fish.
Wow.
Plank that and come up with a roasted vegetable recipe that I have never been able to duplicate. An old close friend of mine, his mother, they loved Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day cookouts, mm-hmm. and they invited everybody over. And she had a recipe for potatoes, onions, green peppers, and a couple other things that she would just bundle up in aluminum foil, season it, put it on the grill, and just let it sit. And
yep.
It was delicious.
Oh, that sounds
And I've
great.
Never been able to get it quite the way she used to do it.
Do you use some oil or
yeah,
butter?
Yeah, olive
in it?
Oil. Oh. Olive oil. You can use some butter with it. Seasonings to order, whatever you prefer. You know,
right.
Not just black pepper, but you could put in oregano or rosemary. I like rosemary potatoes.
Yes, yes.
And
that's
so
a great
you,
idea.
You could do that, but I'll try again. See if I can get it right. But I've never
well, it sounds like you can't. It sounds like you can't make a mistake, though, with that.
No, you can't go wrong.
Right.
But boy, I just... and I'm talking 40 years ago.
And you can still taste
yes,
it.
Yes, right, right. Not to mention the steaks and corn on the cob. You know?
Oh, yes.
Marvelous.
Yeah. No, when this weather hits, there's nothing better than just eating, you know, sitting by the grill, having the radio on, listening to the ball game. I mean, it doesn't get any better than
no,
that.
No, that's absolutely right. And, you know, as a friend of mine pointed out who was from the South here, observed very well that the season is short. So,
right.
You know, every opportunity, you have to get out and enjoy it around here, because
no.
It'll be gone before you know it.
Exactly. We'll be bringing the newsroom Zamboni out of storage. And,
I ordered a new slip and slide for the summer.
I was wondering about that.
But
I haven't seen
well,
the newsroom slip and slide
the,
for
the
a while.
The delay is we have to, when we move it into the new quarters.
So it's an 18-story slip
yeah.
and slide.
Yeah. It's a long way down.
When I walked in, Dave
right
got
into
me...
the Chicago River. What'd you say, Joe?
When I walked in, Dave got me with his super soaker, and he's got the Hawaiian shirt on, the inner tube around his waist. He's way more ready for Memorial Day weekend than I am.
Yeah, I was kind of curious myself about some of the festivities going on early this morning in the newsroom.
He's got sunscreen on his nose. And
sangria in a pitcher.
No, you gave it away.
No one's complaining about that one.
You gave it away.
Well, I would have loved to have seen the opening of the Stanley Cup final today. And I can't believe they're waiting all the way till Monday night for this. And I proudly admit I'm wearing my Vegas Golden Knights shirt on this day to mark their first-time entry into the Stanley Cup final. And our good friend Joe Stampaniatovich, who is now out in Vegas, did a report I saw that all the sports books in Vegas are hoping that the Golden Knights lose.
Well, it makes sense. What were they, 500-1 odds at the beginning of the year?
That's exactly right. They were 500-1 odds. So, and I was talking to a friend, and can you imagine just somebody, you know, out in Vegas, they just won $3,000, you know, at the craps table or something, and they just take $1,000 and go, oh, what the heck, I'll throw it on the Golden Knights.
How about throwing $10 on? I mean, yeah. And then you could just hedge your bet right now, probably. That's funny. You know, they wait so long and so hard to get a professional sports team. They finally do, and now they got to root against them. At least the bookies do.
Yeah, right. But you know, I've been reading a couple of things about, is this a good thing for Vegas to, in their first in their inaugural season, to go to the Stanley Cup final? And you know, is that a bigger sports story than the Cubs winning after 108 years? Or do you have a fan base that won't really know what it's like to go through some dry spells, you know, and expectations will always be high? I mean, it's an interesting kind of train.
They could be spoiled a little bit.
Right.
You know, if they go all the way and win everything this year, their very first season, that will be, you know, kind of expected to be the norm.
Right, right. So what happens when eventually, as will happen, that the team doesn't?
And they won't do it every year.
Well, but doesn't even make the playoffs, let's say.
Yeah, how about that?
And that happens for a couple of seasons.
Well, we
had
a disappointing thing right here in Chicago with that.
Well,
yeah. This year.
But that was the first time in 10 years.
How about that?
Yeah. So,
I feel like on the national aspect, it might be as big a story as the Cubs winning the World Series, but in terms of a local aspect, I mean,
right.
There's no way the fans are held as tight to the Knights are as, you know, people are here for the Cubs. But, you know, the biggest thing I think is you look at the teenagers, the younger kids, now getting to root for a hockey team for the first time. I mean, this has got to make them lifelong fans right now. So, I mean, I think in the long run, yeah, you can look at the one side of the coin saying how spoiled they are, but, I mean, this is going to give them memories in their early hockey fandom experience right away.
Yeah, and you know, I've always been kind of two minds about whether about hockey being played in places where the only ice is normally found in a glass, you know.
Right.
They're a great team and fun to watch, and it'll be interesting to see how Ovechkin is able to gin up the Capitals and get them going after so many frustrating years that they've had out in D.C.
I know. It's kind of ironic for people from Chicago to say it's nice to see a change of pace for people, the teams in the Stanley Cup final. But, you know, when the Blackhawks are out of it, it's nice to see a couple new teams to see, you know, what they can do at the highest stage.
Absolutely. Trust me, if it was Pittsburgh again, I would be going crazy.
You wouldn't be wearing a Penguin shirt right now?
No, you will never find me wearing a Penguin shirt at all.
Is that the one shirt you don't have?
What do you mean?
Well, you've got hockey shirts and hats for almost every team out there.
No, I don't.
Golden Knights.
Well, I thought, frankly, I got this before their season started as a novelty. Rick Kogan actually picked it up.
Okay.
He was out in Vegas.
Okay.
And picked it up for me. But I trust me, this is the only
non-Blackhawks related.
Correct. That is correct. And that's, right. And that's why you haven't seen it very often. You know?
Yeah, today's the first day.
Yeah, so I've worn it once before.
Actually, it's the first day that you
it's
could wear
t-shirt
it
weather.
Not be
yeah.
freezing.
Well, Friday, I think, was the first day, speaking back of the weather again, Friday was the first day I came to Tribune Tower that I didn't have a coat on.
How about that? Yeah.
I mean, finally put away that coat, the old winter coat that was so good to put away and just be done with it. But yeah, now we're in the furnace. So it's
I was in the laundry room of my building a month and a half ago or so. That is not the last time I did the laundry.
I was going to ask you about that.
No. But there was a neighbor in there who was doing laundry and so forth and looked at me as she was taking things out of the dryer and said, "This is my winter coat, and I just washed it and putting it away for the season." Well, I think it might be a good bet that she got it back out again. Begrudgingly.
Right.
Given this spring, quote unquote, that we had.
Well, I think it's summer right now.
It's summer now.
I think spring, there was no spring. I think we just move right straight into summer.
Yeah.
Well, Dave's here to keep us up to date on all the news. Joe's got the sports. Producer Cassera's here to field your phone calls at 312-981-7200. You can text us also at 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. We're on Twitter at @SundaySpin. Engineer Bob is lighting up the newsroom kettle grill. Remember, you can find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcast at iTunes by searching for my name, Rick Pearson. We're going to take a quick break on this bright, sunny, and warm Sunday morning. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to The Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. South Korean President Moon Jae-in said today that North Korean leader Kim Jong-un had reaffirmed his commitment to completely denuclearize the Korean Peninsula and still look forward to meeting President Donald Trump on June 12th. Those remarks came a day after the two Korean leaders met for an unannounced summit. A result of questions over whether the June 12th meeting will take place with the president. The president slammed the New York Times Saturday on Twitter, saying they used, quote, phony sources, unquote, in a story that cited a White House official about prospects of this June 12th summit taking place. The president slamming the New York Times for using phony sources, even though the comments the paper referred to came from a formal background briefing attended by multiple news organizations and was widely reported. And it was based on a White House source, a source that, of course, the president claimed didn't exist. Wrong again, he tweeted. Use real people, not phony sources. And this was a White House background briefing by a White House senior official, as they like to call themselves when they don't want their name attached. So this is quoting a White House aide, not a phony made-up source. All of those kinds of questions amid the fact that the president on Thursday abruptly announced the cancellation of the June 12th summit with Kim Jong-un.
Based on the recent statement of North Korea, I have decided to terminate the planned summit in Singapore on June 12th. While many things can happen and a great opportunity lies ahead potentially, I believe that this is a tremendous setback for North Korea and indeed a setback for the world. I've spoken to General Mattis and the Joint Chiefs of Staff and our military, which is by far the most powerful anywhere in the world, that has been greatly enhanced recently, as you all know, is ready if necessary. Likewise, I have spoken to South Korea and Japan, and they are not only ready should foolish or reckless acts be taken by North Korea, but they are willing to shoulder much of the cost of any financial burden, any of the costs associated by the United States in operations if such an unfortunate situation is forced upon us.
And now the president says never mind. As the White House has set a pre-summit team over to Singapore still trying to see if this June 12th summit will take place. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's The Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in historic Tribune Tower on a beautiful morning, North Michigan Avenue. Joining me on the phone is a good friend of the program, Amanda Vinicky. She's the governmental and political correspondent for WTTW Channel 11 in Chicago. Amanda, good morning and thank you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So this is the final weekend of the General Assembly. They are actually back in session tomorrow as they try to meet their May 31st scheduled adjournment deadline. And I think a lot of questions still persist about whether we're going to get a budget, whether the governor wants a budget, whether they can get out of town as fast as possible, which is, I think, something that they want to do.
You know, that is definitely the goal. Of course, budget part and parcel of that. But, you know, the questions going into this year were really strong for, is there going to be a budget or not? And some of the thinking there was that Democrats would perhaps be inclined to not want a budget passed because that would make Governor Rauner look terrible going into an election. It would make him look, you know, like he was a feckless, that he didn't have any sort of management ability. I'd say that that has kind of been somewhat removed from the discussion. And the second question that you asked is more than one in terms of now, does Governor Rauner actually want a budget? Of course, he at every turn says yes, that he is, and he's long said that. But the kind of underlying question you hear at the Capitol more now is, well, if there is an agreement, might it be something, even if it were to pass the General Assembly, let's pretend, and we're not at that point yet, but is it something that Governor Rauner would veto, perhaps expecting that the General Assembly would override that so that he could campaign on saying, this is a budget that was out of balance, relies on the tax increase that Madigan foisted upon you Illinois residents, and I didn't have any sort of part in that. That's sort of the question. Like I said, right now, we're not there. At this point, it's a whole lot of still negotiating in Springfield, but there is sort of this air of, I've characterized it as optimism. It's a definitely a different sort of feeling than the past couple of years during this historic impasse. The legislature is home right now on Saturday and Sunday, not coming back until Monday. And that's in part because you speak with the leaders who are really in on budget negotiations, and they are all keeping pretty quiet on the details because they say they don't want to ruin what they've agreed to by sharing those stats, and also that they're pretty darn close, they say.
Well, when you mentioned about the governor and, you know, whether he wants a budget or whether he wants to veto a budget, because of the tax increase money still being spending. I mean, in truth, he did propose a budget in his budget message that counted on that money from the tax increase. So.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely. And the only part he campaigns and says, I'm going to roll it back. But the rollback of that is tiny portion relatively, and further is dependent on some pension changes going through that not only haven't passed the General Assembly, but even if they did, the savings wouldn't come for a while, even because it counts on getting through the court system, something else that is all nothing anywhere close to a guarantee. So you're right, Rick, and this is, again, just the sort of talk and discussion. I think part of the question about Rauner is that there hasn't been a budget yet during his term that he has agreed to. And he has a reputation for, you know, pushing the envelope on negotiations, being wary of whatever deal is reached. I think that is in part due to a lack of trust and also his really not getting his way on a whole lot of things. So, he's most certainly a question mark, and I think that's something not just from reporters, but, you know, you talk to Republicans who question really where he is at, but some of that is while you look at whatever is in this budget deal, it appears to be something around $38 billion of general operations spending, but what the underlying questions remain, things that are central to Governor Bruce Rauner, it appears, and that is things, for example, like a capital infrastructure bill, including one that would pay for a new veterans home in Quincy, something that he kind of it has to do something about due to political pressure after a series of stories after Legionnaires spreading at that location and, you know, killing residents of that facility.
Well, and I mean, we had seen earlier this month with the governor pushing specifically on Quincy and wanting $246 million for a rebuild of that veterans home. And he wanted that as a separate standalone bill, demanding the legislature pass it immediately, even though the bill wasn't sponsored or even introduced until May 16th. But at the same time, you know, we're seeing Democrats basically, in some respects, using that bill as leverage for an overall budget.
Right, right. And so that is kind of the game, if you will, right now. It's all about leverage. And will it be something that gets Rauner on board with whatever passes? Like I said, it's a different mood from years past where the goal is, we'd seen, you know, Democrats try and just do their own thing. This is a budget agreement that the people who, again, are leading negotiations say they want to get bipartisan buy-in on. I think that the key things to remember at this point are the question of Rauner and where is he at. As you noted, the matter of leverage and how that will get people on board that may otherwise be reticent to be. But then the other central components are that these negotiations are a heck of a lot easier because much as the governor bemoans it, the revenue from that income tax increase makes it a lot easier to craft any sort of spending plan than in the past couple of years. Not to say that it is easy, not to say that there won't be cuts, but certainly it's a whole lot easier than it has been in the past. And then I think also that budget impasse is something that almost everybody at the Capitol is still in like shock / recovery from and doesn't want a repeat of, both because you have many legislators running for reelection and that would be difficult for them to go back to their constituents and yet again not have a budget in hand. But it's also just, you know, they want their summers. They want to see their families. They saw the devastation that it wreaked on the state and, you know,
sure,
universities.
From the impasse, the safety net crumbling, social service safety net crumbling. And I do think there's a belief, too, that, you know, if they can't get a full, complete deal, there are still those Republicans that went over and joined with Democrats a year ago to break the impasse, and that they're still out there, they're still available if it looks like we're going to get the impasse again.
They're not only out there, but in a sense, stronger than ever, because many of them aren't running for re-election. So any fears that they may had, let's say allegiances, she's sticking with the governor, what have you, those are out the window. They're nearing, you know, lame duck status and would be prone to, they'd already taken what was presumably the hardest vote in many ways of their legislative careers. So at this point, yeah, what do they have to lose in terms of that deal? And everybody knows that. You're right. They know it. So I think they're feeling empowered.
We're speaking with Amanda Vinicky, the governmental and political correspondent for WTTW Channel 11 in Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. Joining me on the phone is Amanda Vinicky, the governmental and political correspondent for WTTW Channel 11. We're talking about the approaching May 31st spring session deadline. which in practicality means that for any major legislation like a budget, if they don't get it done by midnight on Thursday, it requires an extra voting majority of 71 votes in the House, 36 votes in the Senate, and may not sound like a lot of difference there, but it can often be very difficult to come up with those numbers. Amanda, I know we've been talking about the budget, but I'm kind of curious, too, about we had the issue of the legislature approving various gun control legislation. We had the governor turn around with his own amendatory veto of a bill, and that included reinstating the death penalty for murders involving police officers or two or more people. He expanded the bill to, the original bill was just dealing with so-called assault weapons and requiring a 72-hour waiting period for that, but he expanded that for all firearms. And it just always seemed to me that the bill became so comprehensive in his rewrite that while there are often compromises in legislation, it would be too much for legislators to try to balance off. I mean, if you're from downstate Illinois, where Second Amendment gun rights is very important, they're not going to sign, be on board with a 72-hour waiting period for firearms. Plus, then you throw in the issue of reinstating the death penalty, and we've kind of litigated that issue here in Illinois. I'm wondering, does anything ultimately come of it?
You know, there's been more political theater on that front. You had a series of hearings. You now have a group of legislators from both parties coming out with a bill that would take and put in place the death penalty portion of Rauner's amendatory veto, also include, I believe, a death penalty sentence for anybody found guilty beyond all reasonable doubt of killing a firefighter, as well as these, quote, mass murderers and individuals who are found guilty beyond all doubt. That's part of Rauner's plan, not just reasonable doubt, but anyway, of cop killers. But that is something that I think was introduced more for political cover, what have you, a discussion. What does or doesn't pass in terms of gun legislation, we could see another run, a return of a gun dealer licensing bill, something that the governor also vetoed. That was just prior to the primary, but something that advocates are not pushing back from. They are making some changes and fine-tuning, but gun legislation, that carjacking in general, a lot of bills that are being carefully watched by people concerned particularly about the violence in the city of Chicago, are some of those that have been kind of pushed off until this week while negotiations continue. There was a rumor that gun dealer licensing bill was going to even be called on Thursday, but you had an issue of some legislators already taken off for the Memorial Day weekend. I think that's a real issue, knowing that they would be back in Springfield this coming week for all of those truly hot button issues. But no, I don't think that there is much, or if any, expectation that the governor's amendatory veto itself will be enacted into law and that legislators will get on board with that for the reasons that you just described. I mean, there's a whole lot in there. And adding to that, it is presumed that all that he did in that amendatory veto was just so much that it went beyond what the Constitution says an amendatory veto is intended to do, and that it would be tossed out as, you know, basically illegal.
We also have the continued discussion over the Equal Rights Amendment and ratification of that as for the U.S. Constitution, which I have to say brought back a lot of memories because my first year covering the Illinois General Assembly was 1982, and much of that time was spent involving all of the demonstrations and protests that surrounded what was then the deadline, the June 30th deadline for ratification of three states. Illinois was one of them that was targeted for the Equal Rights Amendment. And everything old is new again here in Illinois.
You know, Rick, it's funny. I'm actually speaking to you from just outside of St. Louis, Missouri. I was here for a wedding. And
Are you in Alton?
No, I'm in Lake. I'm actually in Wildwood, Missouri now. It's beautiful. I'm in the woods. Bird chirping. I've seen a deer, horses, and it's beautiful and rustic. But my point being that at the wedding, they were serving Schlafly beer. And so I was speaking with some folks who don't follow all of Illinois politics and history about, well, actually, she's part of this Schlafly family. Phyllis Schlafly. And yeah.
Yes. So
everything old is new again, and also in beer in bottled form.
Phyllis Schlafly, of course, was the head of the Eagle Forum, and she was from Alton, Illinois, and they were the principal national force to stop the Equal Rights Amendment at the time. And as
some of her relatives or descendants are now part of the fight as well, and testified, I believe, an ERA hearing in Springfield, still fighting against its implementation.
And it's not clear whether the votes are there to pass it out of the House. That needs 71 votes.
The Senate. Mm-hmm. Already passed the Senate. The governor doesn't need to take action on that one, but it has been interesting to sort of watch him wiggle when asked by reporters where he stands. He hasn't taken a direct stance on the amendment itself, but says that he supports equal rights for everyone. So he's trying as hard as he can to not get in that jerk box, because particularly with the Republican Party, there's a whole lot of division there, which is exactly why you see Democrats. There is an effort on the national level to do this, but that is where you see Democrats in particular, Rauner's opponent, Democratic nominee J.B. Pritzker, trying to foist this as a political issue. So we may well see a showdown on the Illinois House floor on that this coming week. Or I would expect a lot of that reason to do what they can to make life difficult for Rauner heading into the election, but also, of course, in this era of, Me Too and women empowerment, the ERA is seeing a resurgence. Again, legal questions with that one. Even if Illinois were to take action, you need action by at least one other state. And further, is it so far past the deadline that this is merely symbolic? For some people, that symbolism would be enough.
A lot to watch in the coming days. Amanda Vinicky from WTTW Channel 11, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you so much, and fingers crossed, good luck to everyone during this end of session, and a happy Memorial Day.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. President obsessed with issues involving reports that there was an informant passing intelligence to the FBI during his campaign, tweeting out this morning about the lives destroyed by the phony Russia collusion witch hunt. In the president's words, he says if there was a spy, that it could be worse than Watergate.
As you know, the Congress would like to see documents opened up. A lot of people are saying they had spies in my campaign. If they had spies in my campaign, that would be a disgrace to this country. That would be one of the biggest insults that anyone's ever seen, and it would be very illegal, aside from everything else. It would make probably every political event ever look like small potatoes. So we want to make sure that there weren't. I hope there weren't, frankly. But some man got paid based on what I read in the newspapers and on what you reported. Some person got paid a lot of money. That's not a normal situation, the kind of money you're talking about.
But on ABC's The View, Joy Behar asked former National Intelligence Director James Clapper if the FBI was spying on Trump or his campaign.
Was the FBI spying on Trump's campaign?
No, they were not. They were spying on a term I don't particularly like, but on what the Russians were doing, trying to understand, were the Russians infiltrating, trying to gain access, trying to gain leverage and influence?
So why doesn't
which
he like
what they do?
So why doesn't he like that? He should be happy though.
Well, he should
doing.
Be.
Right.
Russia, and this is one of the reasons I wrote my book, was the threat that Russia poses because they are bent on undermining our system. And that's what they did and had a lot of success during the course of the election.
We're going to switch gears from the national scene back to the local scene in Springfield. And joining me now on the phone is Deputy Republican Leader in the Illinois House, State Representative Dan Brady from Bloomington. Representative, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
My pleasure, Rick. Good to be with you. I know you get a chance to talk to a lot of different Bradys, but it's been a long time since you and I have had a chance.
Well, and it's good to talk to you again. But
it is.
But you've been busy. I mean, you're part of the budgeteers, as they're known, the budget negotiators in Springfield, and that still seems to be the fundamental question is, are we still on path towards getting a state budget?
The answer to that is yes. At this point, of course, you know, as well as anybody, that we've still got a ways to go, meaning till May 31st. And I think that at this stage of things, what I'm encouraged by, continue to be encouraged by, Rick, is the fact that the communication is still there. In fact, has gotten to an area where some legislators with specific knowledge and expertise in the budget have been working and are able to take those ideas and move those up to the leaders who continue to meet. And I think when you have the communications still ongoing and you have an agreement from the standpoint of let's continue these talks, let's continue to meet, let's let the rank and file legislators who have some expertise in some areas do their job and give us some ideas and resources maybe we hadn't thought of, that's all good. And that has been there and continues to be there. And there's been a minimal amount, really, of situations that cause everybody to have a hiccup and step back and move back from a negotiation table. So very encouraged, but we still have several days to go. And as you know, things can happen in Springfield very quickly and change.
They can turn on a dime over an argument about a dime.
Yes, they can.
But what would you say is attributable to this kind of change of climate in regarding budgetary issues?
Well, I think the biggest would have to be the fact that for 2 years, a little over that, we went out without a budget in this state. And we, as legislators, rank and file especially, saw what devastating action that was having on so many that depend on state government for funding. You know, from schools to social service agency and so many other areas of state government, public safety, and the list goes on. And so with that, I think that's a vivid memory that no one wants to repeat. And that's Democrats and Republicans. And I think that helps to spearhead the cooperation that's going on. Now, it's a big old state out there, and both caucuses are very diverse of members in the House I'm speaking to, as well as really the Senate. And so, you know, there's a lot of different interest of how we do this, but overall, it has been a much better, stable working environment than we've had in the past. And I just have to really point to a number of colleagues of mine that have continued to do a great job of leading negotiations and using their expertise in certain areas, whether that be Medicaid, part of the budget, or health care, higher education I've been involved with, so many. And you know, people like Senator Heather Staines on the Senate side and her expertise, Representative Tom Demmer on our side, Senator Chapin Rose, Representative Greg Harris. I mean, they are there, and they are working constantly, and that's an encouraging sign. And so we're hoping that everything stays on track.
We're speaking with Republican State Representative Dan Brady of Bloomington. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Good Sunday morning, and welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. We're speaking with Republican State Representative Dan Brady of Bloomington, Deputy Republican Leader and a House GOP budget negotiator. Representative, when I was speaking earlier in the program to Amanda Vinicky, one of the questions has arisen about where is the governor in the mix on when it comes to the issue of getting a budget, and questions seem to persist about whether or not he wants to see a budget deal come out of the legislature.
Well, I most certainly believe that Governor Reiner wants to see a budget deal come out of it. It's in everyone's best interest in the state that we do. He wants to see a full year budget. He wants to see a balanced budget. And that is something that we're all working diligently towards. And the governor has certainly been involved with the leaders' meetings, which, as I indicated in the first segment when we talked, that continue. And that is something that's important, because that wasn't there. At least the intensity of that wasn't there in recent years of putting together this, putting together a budget for a variety of reasons. But so a full-year budget and a balanced budget and no new taxes. And so, you know, that's a charge that the governor has had. And the overall tone, Rick, is in an environment is much better as far as communications on both sides going. Now, there's a variety of reasons for that. Some can say it's political year. No one wants to be back in a district trying to explain to voters when you're running for re-election why you don't have a state budget. But more so, I really think it's compelling on all of us that we certainly understand we don't want a repeat of what's occurred in the past, of an impasse, and we want to try and neutralize to the best of our ability our differences, focus in on our strengths where we can agree, and that's what's been going on. So certainly my hope is, and I believe it will continue, and you know, as long as we got that give and take going, we got a chance. But we've got to remember, we've got $6 billion in backlog bills. We've got over $130 billion, depending on who you talk to and believe, of pension debt. We've got some of the highest taxes there are in this country. And so those are all things that we have to wrestle with. Those are huge problems. But so far, we are addressing those, and we are on track, I believe, for a budget.
One of the issues involving a budget, too, is also the issue of a capital budget. And we saw, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, the governor's request for $246 million to rebuild the Quincy Veterans Home, and that he wanted kind of expedited action on that. But we also kind of have seen, and I refer specifically to Senate President John Cullerton, saying that that should be considered as part of an entire budget package. And so we've kind of a little bit of leveraging going on. Just I wonder your thoughts on that.
Well, you could look at that as a little bit of leveraging, the Quincy's Veterans Home situation. But also we've got to stay focused on, as well, some of those capital projects that have been out there and that have been reappropriated every year since, gosh, in some cases, clear back to 2010. And I'm speaking in particular to a lot of capital projects, of obviously brick and mortar, in particular to some of our universities. And so where we can have a project coming out of the CDB, the Capital Development Board, and not only try and reappropriate, but have, whether it's a bond sale, what have you, to actually start releasing some dollars, that's very important as well. And so how we can tie that all together, well, you know, that remains to be seen, Rick, but the important part is that there are those trying to get that done, and the environment is much better to work in.
I know, too, that there's a hearing scheduled in the House tomorrow about gambling expansion in Illinois, and I had Representative Rita on the program last week talking about now the emerging issue of sports gaming, now that the U.S. Supreme Court has decided that states can do that. one thing that Representative Rita said was that sports gaming is something that kind of has brought all sides together. It's something that they all see something that they can get out of it. But I remain kind of skeptical that, one, the trying to legalize sports gaming in Illinois is going to be a very comprehensive thing and not something that can necessarily be done in 4 days. And that, well, absent that, there isn't going to be any kind of expansion of casino gaming to Chicago and some other communities. Just your thoughts.
Well, my thoughts are certainly Representative Rita is much closer to that than I am, but I will tell you that around the Capitol, lobbyists and representatives of the national legalizing of gaming have been present. I don't believe you're going to see Illinois doing anything, obviously, before we get done with this session on that particular issue. And the other overall gaming issue remains to be seen as well. But when you look at that as obviously a revenue source, which the state needs, and you look at it as a revenue source that could be tied somehow to capital, it's certainly a player, at least the gaming part of it. The timing, I'm suspect of the fact that it can get done as well, but it could be something worked on over the summer and into a fall veto session.
Well, and I also thought, too, that it, not just for capital, but perhaps some kind of a debt relief fund for our pension debt.
Absolutely. And you know, I gave you the numbers earlier, estimated, of our pension debt. And any way that we can tie revenue into that, gaming, or other means, bonding, et cetera, that's what we're looking at and we'll continue to look at. And I think that because of some of those avenues being opened up, it looks as if there's a list, at least some avenues to explore that haven't been there in past years. And so that is encouraging, at least in my opinion.
I also wanted to ask you one last thing, and that, and I also spoke with Amanda Vinicky about this too, is the issue of gun control, gun restrictions, the governor's language also looking for a reinstatement of the death penalty. And it just seems like this is an issue that, of course, we have our diversity and regionalism and all of that, but it almost seems like that's nothing's going to happen there.
Well, certainly, if you look at the issue from a perspective of where I'm at downstate, it means a lot of different things downstate than it does up north. And looking at what the governor had put together in his AV plays differently downstate with downstate legislators. Now, whether or not there's going to be action taken, I don't know. I mean, certainly as a speaker, knows where he's going to advance or not advance. But the matter is, the reality, as far as I'm concerned, is that some of the things that the governor did interject certainly has some merit and at least should be looked at. But it certainly would open Pandora's box over the whole issue again. And I don't know that we're going to, whether we'll see that or not, I don't know, before Thursday, May 31st.
Still a lot of things moving along in Springfield, and we'll be keeping an eye on it, and we'll be keeping an eye with you, Republican State Representative Dan Brady. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Rick, good to be with you anytime, and hopefully we'll see you down in Springfield this week.
Very good. Thank you.
Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. Last week, the president celebrated NASCAR champ Martin Truex and his racing team, and during his talks, the president brought up standing for the national anthem. Now, that happened just days before the NFL announced its new policy on the national anthem. Teams on the field must stand. Players who don't will be fined. Players also don't have to come on the field for the anthem. This could be raising more problems than its intent to solve here. But here are the comments from President Trump.
This lively sport reflects our national spirit and our can-do attitude. At every NASCAR race, you will see thousands of patriotic Americans from the grandstands to the pit stalls proudly waving our flag and roaring with joy at the words, "Start your engines." And I will tell you one thing I know about NASCAR. They do indeed, Brian, stand for the playing of the national anthem, right? They do indeed. Somebody said, maybe you shouldn't say that. That'll be controversial. I said, that's okay. NASCAR's not going to mind it at all. Right, fellas? They don't mind it at all.
That's President Trump from last week. Joining me now on the phone is Democratic Deputy Majority Leader of the Illinois House, State Representative Lou Lang from Skokie. Representative, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Good morning, Rick. Happy to be with you.
We've been talking a lot about, obviously, we're coming to the closing days of the scheduled closing days of the spring legislative session, and talking a lot about the issue of the budget. And we just spoke with Republican State Representative Dan Brady, and I get a sense of perhaps more optimism than I can recall for the last several years that we actually appear to be working toward a resolution on the budget. I was wondering what your take on that is.
I think that's true. You may recall that we went over 2 years without a budget. The governor refused to lead us to the table. And last year we had about 15 House Republicans who said enough is enough, and they joined Democrats in the House to get a budget accomplished. And then many of them joined with us to override the governor's veto of that budget. And so that was a breakthrough, to the point where people are now talking real well together, at least legislators are. There's, of course, separate meetings going on involving the four legislative leaders and the governor. I'm actually not so sure those meetings are going so well. The governor seems very disengaged in the process, despite his public comments. I do believe we'll have a budget, because legislators want to have one, and we're going to put one on the governor's desk.
Well, and that you kind of went to a point I was curious about, where that seems to be the major question is, where is the governor? Does he politically want a budget in this re-election year?
You know, he's done some curious things over the last 3.5 years, so it's pretty hard to predict, but my view is that if he signs a budget, he's got nothing to complain about, so I don't expect him to sign it, frankly. It would be good if he did. If he doesn't, he's liable to get overridden, as he did last year. Legislators believe it's in the best interest of the state of Illinois to have a budget. I think the people of the state of Illinois believe that as well. The governor went, he's now gone 3.5 years without being engaged in the process. It's time for him to do that. And it's not too late for him to do that. He can be involved, and he can sign a budget that we can all agree to if he gets to the table and is willing to do his job.
But knowing, as you point out, with the belief that, you know, if he vetoes it, it would be overridden, is it in his interest to sign a budget?
It didn't seem to bother him last time that he was overridden. He's got a political posture. The polls would indicate that he's in serious trouble for his reelection. And because of that, he's going to do what's ever in his best political interest, not what's ever in the best political interest of the people of Illinois.
Well, in dealing with the negotiations, the budgeteers talking, those kinds of things, and that optimism, I get a sense from all parties in the legislature that they just don't want to relive relive the times of the impasse and the what it did to higher ed, what it did to the social service safety net, those kinds of things. That seems a motivating factor, particularly as we all know this is an election year.
Well, it certainly is a motivating factor. You know, people on both sides of the aisle, even though we couldn't get our act together, certainly understood that those first 2 years without a budget were not a positive for the state of Illinois in any way you can think of. And we know that despite the fact that we have many problems ahead of us in the present and future of Illinois, getting a budget accomplished last year moved the state forward. That's all you can hope to do, is make progress and move the state forward. And if we go without a budget this year, we'll return to those dark days. So legislators want to make sure we have a budget, and that's why you're getting all these positive reports from legislators regarding the direction of these budget negotiations.
And we also have the backdrop, too, that if we were to go into impasse, perhaps something that would last past the July 1st start of the budget year, we're going into junk bond status.
Well, that could easily happen, and because of that, it's cost the state of Illinois tens of millions of dollars in extra interest, and we can't afford to waste a single dollar in the state of Illinois, let alone tens of millions, due to the stubbornness of a governor that doesn't just want to do his job correctly.
One of the other things, and I brought this up with Representative Brady, too, was the issue of, here with Memorial Day, the Quincy Veterans Home and the capital funding to rebuild that. And we had the governor come in and on May 16th with an appropriations bill seeking $246 million to rebuild Quincy. And I got the sense, and he wanted it to move as a separate standalone bill, and I got the sense that from, particularly, as I said before, Senate President John Cullerton, that it should be part of a comprehensive budget agreement, not as a separate kind of bill. As the Senate President said, we need a complete budget because you need to pay the people that work at the Quincy Veterans Home, and that's also part of what's going on. I was wondering, you know, what your thoughts are on, particularly as it comes to Quincy and also to a capital budget.
If people aren't fully aware of that story at the Quincy Veterans Home, people died because of the water in the pipes in that facility. And the governor and his people bumbled the commentary afterwards and the restoration and the remediation of that home. This has been going on for months and months and months. So the governor coming to the legislature with his hair on fire 2 weeks before the end of the scheduled session, when he had all session to deal with this, says a lot about his attitude about all of this. He could have come to us months ago. He could have had a special session of the legislature. He could have done lots of things months and months and months ago to deal with this problem. So now here we are at the end of session. We could pass a separate bill to deal with this. But even if we do, it still has to be part of the budget discussions. Whatever we do, we still have to pay for. So whether it's a separate bill or whether it's wrapped into the final budget, at this point is almost irrelevant. What is relevant is that we have to fix that problem. And if the governor's not willing to do it with us, we'll just have to do it for him.
We're speaking with Deputy Majority Leader, State Representative Lou Lang, Democrat from Skokie. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. Joining me on the phone is Democratic State Representative Lou Lang from Skokie, Deputy House Majority Leader. We're talking about the scheduled end Thursday of the spring legislative session. We've been talking a lot about budgetary issues, but Representative Lang, I'm curious about where things are moving as far as the spate of bills and the governor's rewrite of bills involving anti-crime initiatives and things like a 72-hour waiting period for gun purchases and the governor's proposal as well to try and reinstitute the death penalty in Illinois. Where do those things stand, and are we likely just to not see anything?
Rick, these things are flying all over the place. As you know, when the governor issued his amendatory veto on other bills that were on his desk, he was really all over the place. He pandered to the left. He pandered to the right. He actually violated the Constitution by rewriting bills, which he is not allowed to do with his amendatory veto power. And so these have been broken down into smaller pieces, and there's debate going on. There are subject matter hearings going on, and there may or may not be votes on these things. I can tell you that there's a very strong level of disdain for the governor trying to reinstitute the death penalty in the state of Illinois. So he picked out some particularly heinous things, and he said, well, we should have a death penalty for those. Well, that's kind of pandering to people, I think. What the governor did was political, plain and simple. He wasn't trying to improve public policy. He wasn't trying to make the world a better place. He was trying to do something that he felt was good for his reelection.
Well, I was curious as far as the death penalty about, and the governor saying that reinstituting it for the death of a law enforcement officer or in the case of the murders of two or more people, but using the standard of beyond all doubt, which I'm not familiar with that. You're a lawyer. Maybe you are. I've never heard that as a legal standard or one that would survive any kind of scrutiny.
I've heard the phrase, but I haven't heard it in any legal way from legal scholars. Maybe someone's using it. I didn't use it or hear about it when I went to law school. Beyond all doubt is just a phrase that the governor is using to try to put a line between what he would call especially outrageous situations, terrorism, the death of a police officer, and other deaths. So I'm not quite sure why the murder of a police officer is deserves a greater punishment than the murder of a postal worker or a plumber or a teacher or anybody else. And I think we have to be very careful as we go down that road. There are certainly discussions going on in the House and Senate regarding what the governor proposed, and those discussions will be ongoing. But I'm certainly not convinced yet that what the governor did is the right thing to do.
And, you know, obviously we've kind of litigated this issue in Illinois before, and with the history of wrongful convictions, there's a lot of unease about trying to bring the death penalty back in the state.
Well, aside from all the discussion over the years about whether the death penalty is moral or immoral, we have a long series of people on death row or put to death in the history of Illinois that were later found to be innocent. We cannot execute innocent people. And so that's why the governor uses the term all doubt. He doesn't know. Nobody knows what that term means or how to get there or what the legal standard for that is. And so to just make up a phrase and to create law when you're the governor, when you don't have the right to do that under the Constitution, and to do it in a political way that gets people all excited and all exercised when we ought to have responsible, rational conversation about criminal justice reform in the state of Illinois seems to me to be the wrong way to go.
In the closing minutes that we have, I want to ask you, and I touched on this subject earlier this morning with Amanda Vinicky, the issue of the Equal Rights Amendment as a part of the U.S. Constitution. And I said to her that this brought back a lot of memories because 1982, which was the original ratification deadline, that was my first session covering Springfield as a reporter. And it seems like sometimes everything old is new again when it comes to Springfield. Where are we as far as that proposal in the Illinois House?
As many know, Rick, I'm the sponsor of this and have been for some period of time. I've been trying to pass this for 25 years. And people, like you say, long before I was in the legislature, trying to pass it as well. This has already passed the Senate. Let me remind people that we already have equal rights language for women in our Illinois Constitution. Men and women have equal rights in the Illinois Constitution. All this amendment is trying to do is put women in the United States Constitution. Justices Ginsburg and, when he was alive, Justice Scalia, as far apart as you can be on the political spectrum, both commented that women are not protected under the United States Constitution. In fact, the only place women are mentioned in the United States Constitution is the right to vote. So women have the right to vote in the Constitution, But there's a lot of rights they don't have because they're not mentioned in the Constitution. We're a few votes short, but we're working on them. And I don't know why we should be short votes. This is the year 2018. For people to say that women aren't due their rights, the same rights men are under the United States Constitution, is simply appalling. And so we're going to work on this and try to make it happen. And if Illinois can pass this, we'll need one more state to put women in the United States Constitution.
That's Democratic State Representative Lou Lang from Skokie, Deputy Majority Leader of the Illinois House. Representative, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Have a great holiday, Rick, and to all the listeners.